This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and the Academy Awards are coming up on Sunday night, and that means that around the country, movie buffs are chilling the Chardonnay and firing up the finger food, but when it comes to the eats, it cannot be an easy year to whip up a culinary theme, not when the top movies feature elf bread, soup lines, and weevils. Fortunately, food historian Francine Seagan has a new spin on dinner in a movie with a book of recipes to help you get closer to your favorite films without needing to dress up like a hobbit. She joins us now from our bureau in New York, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, Neil.
And we also want to hear from you listeners. Do you have a menu that goes particularly well with a favorite film or a cinematic meal that always gets your stomach grumbling? Give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, or send us email at totn@npr.org. So, Francine Seagan, what are you serving this weekend for your Oscar party?
I'm going to do a little bit from each of the Best Picture nominees.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, for Lord of the Rings, some middle-age favorites like individual meat pies or Neapolitan eggplant that came from a recipe that explained that you should cook the eggplant for as long as it takes to, say, 2 hour fathers.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Listen, they didn't have kitchen clocks, so they needed to give another reference.
And, well, I guess it depended how quickly you could get through the prayer, but it's a fairly, a standard rate. What about some of the other food you're going to be serving up?
Well, Seabiscuit and the Depression are interesting. The food then was very unique, the Roaring Twenties and Thirties. So I'm doing for dessert a mock apple pie. Back then, when apples were a penny, but crackers were free, they came up with this great dessert that tastes just yummy, and I think it goes perfect with Seabiscuit.
And I understand you also have a recipe from our nautical film this year, Master and Commander.
Oh, a high seas, high tea. Set in 1805, that sort of reminds me of the Victorian era. And so I've got some great desserts. I'm going to do a lemon cake, of course. We've got to keep those sailors from getting scurvy.
If you'd like to see any of these recipes, by the way, you can get them at our website, which is npr.org, and just go on to the Talk of the Nation page. So, Francine, how did you get into doing a recipe book matched to movies?
It all came because when I was working on my first book, Shakespeare's Kitchen, I invited a bunch of friends over for a tasting to test some of the recipes while we watched Shakespeare in Love. Mm-hmm. And it became this huge, fun thing. Everybody was shouting out how great it was to be feeling like they were back in those times of the Renaissance. Some friends were saying that they feel like it was 3D glasses for their stomachs. And then everybody got into the idea of, well, okay, so this is what they would really have eaten back in Shakespeare's time. What would they have eaten in Gladiator time? And what would they have eaten? And people were throwing out movies, and suddenly just this light bulb went off, and I realized this is another book.
Well, food does not play an especially large role in Shakespeare in Love, but we do have a short clip from that movie where a tavern waiter reveals the day's fare.
The special today is a pig's foot marinated in juniper berry vinegar, served on a buckwheat pancake.
So the marinated pig's foot, did that make it into the book?
No, I skipped that one. I also skipped some of their other specialties of that time, like roast peacock.
Ooh, that, I'm not sure, I suspect there's, you know, fundamentally no reason why it probably tastes like chicken, but, you know, there's no reason to be offended, but somehow it just doesn't sound right.
Actually, even back then, they didn't think it tasted good. What was funny is that the writers at the time would say, oh, I went to this great feast at the king's house and they served peacock. You know, it's terrible. It's a dry, awful bird. But it just was something so gorgeous. They would put it back out on the table with all the feathers on it and gild the beak and even have it maybe looking like it was shooting fire with some special effects they'd do in the kitchen.
Well, dry is just how I make chicken. Anyway, let's get some callers on the line. And Nat is on the line with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hello.
Hi, Nat. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
My wife and I like to enjoy a little blackened tuna while we watch Finding Nemo.
Not a little too cannibalistic for you?
No. It seems to fit in rather well, we think.
Uh-huh. So maybe some krill I would have thought might have been the meal
yeah,
of choice.
If I could find some, maybe we'd do that too.
I'm sure that there's a Trader Joe's out there somewhere that has bags of krill.
You're probably right.
Did that inspire you at all, Francine, Finding Nemo?
I actually have a shrimp coated in real popcorn as one of my dishes in the family movie night chapter as my little nod to Finding Nemo.
Really? Real popcorn? What's real popcorn as opposed to Orville Redenbacher's?
Well, instead of calling it popcorn shrimp, which just means really little shrimp in a different kind of batter. I actually use popcorn in the batter.
Uh-huh. And does it pop out like that, like popcorn does?
Yeah, it looks like little popcorn bowls. Huh. The whole idea for the family movie night is to get the kids to have dinner with you. Nowadays, it's getting harder and harder. And what I did is all the recipes can be served in bowls and then passed around. This way, we don't do the same old of fork, knife, individual settings. We sit around the video and have something a little different.
Nat, have a great meal on Oscar night.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Kathleen. Kathleen's with us from Modesto, California.
Hello. I'm happy to talk to you. This is the first time I've called in, but I listen all the time.
Well, welcome.
And here's my favorite movie food. I haven't made it, but I've eaten it. It's an old movie, Katherine Hepburn, Spencer Tracy, Death Set. Do you know the movie?
I do know the movie, yes.
And this is when they were having the horror of horror room-sized computer take over the work of people, you know, kind of 1950s movie. Anyway.
A little Luddite in there, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Spencer Tracy gets caught in the rain, and Katherine Hepburn, the research executive, invites him to her home to dry off and have dinner. And lo and behold, this working woman has got floating island in her refrigerator waiting for dinner for him, which I just think is so funny because it takes a lot of work to make floating islands. I've never made it, but I know what it is, and I've eaten it in restaurants.
Well, for those of us who are unfamiliar with it, describe it for us, Kathleen.
Well, it's like a vanilla creme dessert. You can't call it pudding. It's more along the lines of a French creme, like a little more body than what you would have in a creme brulee. But then you have meringue that you whip up, you know, and get it all frothy, the egg whites in the meringue, and you add sugar to it, and you have these little, you plop it into the bowl of creme, and so you have little floating islands.
I would think Katherine Hepburn would have plenty of time to whip that up while repartee ensued.
You know, just get home from work and throw that puppy together. But I always, every time I see that movie, it always cracks me up that she's got floating islands waiting in her refrigerator just in case someone happens to drop by.
Just in case.
Marriageable quality.
Are you going to try some floating islands on this Sunday evening?
Probably not. I have 6-year-old triplets, and I think it's a little more than I want to undertake.
Well, Kathleen, thanks very much.
Sure, thank you.
Francine, I was going to ask, I mean, one of the things in the movie Master and Commander, they make a great deal out of this boiled suet pudding that they have, a dessert, which is showing how they're going to capture the Frenchman they've been pursuing the whole movie. Of course, it doesn't work out that way. But anyway, they dig in, and there's all kinds of these desserts, which, having read some of those books, aren't really, you know, enticing too much.
No, that's why I got the privilege of using 2,000 years worth of cookbooks and just cherry-picking whatever I thought was yummy. And I skipped the pages, turned my nose up to lots of things.
So as you go through the... do you watch films and look at the food?
It's part of my job. Absolutely. When I was working on this book, it was the best days of my life. Mornings in the library, looking up old cookbooks and the way people were doing things back in the past, trying them out at home in the afternoon, then running and renting 2 or 3, sometimes, videos so that we could all watch and taste things at night, keep my little notepad out, write down quotes when people were eating in the movies. It was such fun.
What are the best meals on film?
Well, for yumminess, I definitely liked my Big Fat Greek Wedding and Godfather. Mm-hmm. I thought some of the great things. And also tortilla soup. If watching that man, that chef, making those wonderful Mexican meals doesn't get you wanting to go into the kitchen, run and start cooking, I don't know what will.
We're speaking with Francine Seagan, the food historian, the author of Movie Menus, Recipes for Perfect Meals with Your Favorite Films. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Rob, who's with us in Gainesville, Florida.
Hi.
How are
you doing?
All right.
We do a lot of the theme kind of things that Francine was talking about, too, but some of them are more just blatantly direct. We always do vodka and dates when we watch Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Mm-hmm.
But the most exciting one, I think, is when we have showings of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and we make rare steaks and just mountains of mashed potatoes and literally changed them into mountains of mashed potatoes.
The Devil's Tower, of course.
Absolutely.
Oh, I've forgotten the Devil's Tower.
There are rules about this, that you're not allowed to actually preview the movie to remember what it looks like, so it becomes a contest as to who can do the best Devil's Tower from memory. And if you make the potatoes too creamy, which makes them taste better, they make a terrible building, you know, structure.
Our material, it'd have to be fairly dry, yeah.
Right.
But it can't be too dry, because then it would, well, I guess that's the complication, isn't it, Rob?
Right. And we've only had one time where somebody actually pulled up a tree and decided that they would become Richard Dreyfuss fully incarnate, but you know.
That's got to be an alarming thought.
There was no vodka that night as well, so.
Well, thanks, Rob, and are you doing anything special this Oscar night?
No, I'll be working for my dad, making barbecue in his restaurant, so.
All right.
I guess if evil people come around, I'll cheer for the Lord of the Rings and throw them on the grill or something like that. But,
thanks very much, and have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Bye-bye. Why don't we go to Jack, and Jack's with us from San Jose, California.
Hello, Neil. How are you?
Okay.
The best movie about food is Big Night with Stanley Tucci.
And Tony Shalhoub, of course.
Yeah.
And they work in a restaurant, and I didn't see the food so much for all the arguing going on.
Yeah, but when they serve that dinner waiting for Louis Prima to show up, it's like I get hungry. It's a wonderful thing.
Have you seen that, Francine?
No, not lately.
It's a great movie, and it's a great movie about food.
Yeah.
So you're going out to an Italian restaurant for Oscar night, Jack?
Oh, no, but probably cook it at home.
Okay.
Have a
great time. And let's go to Ellen, who's with us from Indianapolis.
Yes. I have one of the foods that's featured very prominently in the Lord of the Rings movies, of course, is Lembas, the bread of the elves.
Right. It's their, they pack it along, and it becomes a big plot device in this last third part of the epic.
And what a lot of people probably don't realize is that J.R.R. Tolkien wrote a whole essay about how Lembas is made, which appears in the book The Peoples of Middle-earth.
And how is it made?
Well, it's gills that are very complicated, and it can't touch any metal. Unfortunately, he doesn't tell a lot about ingredients. It's only made by women. The grain that it's grown from can only be touched by women. It's sort of sacred to Galadriel and the female elves. He doesn't say a lot about what went into it, but in my recipe, it's something like a whole grain shortbread. I use oats, corn, and wheat, and it's completely sweetened with maple syrup because I figure the elves with all those trees, that would be using some sort of tree sap might be a logical way to make Lembas.
And have you carried it in a backpack when you hiked off into Mordor?
Actually, I haven't been to Mordor, but I have taken it. It does hold up well. It's unfortunately not low fat. There's some cream cheese in there and some cream. But it holds up pretty well over the long haul, and it is very filling.
Okay, Ellen. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And see if we can squeeze in one more before we run out of time. John with us in Tallahassee, Florida.
Hi. My memory is the best meal that I ever had from a movie was my wife made me a meal based on The Great Gatsby.
Ooh, that might have been pretty
good. And it started off, I recall, with a very large dry martini, served with hot roasted mixed nuts, and then a New York strip steak with mushrooms. And unfortunately, I can't remember what else she served, but...
Well, the martini may have had some effect on that.
The martini had a lot to do with it, but I just remember it's a meal that I'll never forget because it just brought me back to that movie and the era.
John, thanks very much for the idea.
Thank you.
Martini Bye-bye. Sounds pretty good about now. Francine, thanks so much for coming in today.
Oh, thank you, Neil.
Francine Seagan is the author of Movie Menus, Recipes for Perfect Meals with Your Favorite Films, and she was with us from our bureau in New York. You can find recipes to serve up with Master and Commander and Lord of the Rings at Talk of the Nation page at npr.org. Ira's here tomorrow. We'll see you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.